You're listening to SBS News.
Cost of Living Secrets, brought to you by Ricardo Gonçalves and Peggy Giacomelos for SBS News.
So, Peggy, the last time you went to the petrol station, mm-hmm. how much did you spend?
I probably spent about $75 on petrol and about $3.50 on chips. Yep.
On chips?
Yep.
So you're a shopper when you go to the convenience store?
I tend to be. It's either that or a little chocolate treat. That's kind of my bonus for filling up with petrol. So, yeah, about $75 though for my little three-cylinder car.
Don't you find it interesting that when we go to the petrol station, often we're not just spending money filling up with fuel, we're also spending money inside the convenience store, which is typically more expensive than supermarket prices. But to tell us more about how to save money every day at the petrol station, we're joined by Peter Khoury from the NRMA. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Can we start with the basics? How are petrol prices actually set?
So in Australia, petrol prices are set almost exclusively by things outside of our control. So the first thing you look at are oil prices. And the oil prices will be the number one factor that decides what we're going to pay when we go to fill up at the bowser. So as they go up, the price at the bowser will go up. We pay tax here in Australia. It's called the fuel excise. Almost 50 cents a litre is tax. We also pay GST on that tax, so that's 10% of that as well. So it's a tax on a tax, and the only other commodities where that happens is alcohol and cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And so they're the two biggest factors, and then also the profit margins of the oil companies. So when we talk about prices going up and down, it's normally because of movements in those areas.
So you mentioned international oil prices as a major component. How long after things change on an international level do we see changes, you know, when we're filling up our cars?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. It takes normally, we say, around 7 to 10 days. And the reason for that is refinery. Most of our fuel comes, almost all of our fuel now comes from overseas, and a lot of that is also refined overseas. So by the time it takes to get here, the refinery costs, if the price goes up $5 a barrel today, normally around 7 to 10 days, that would be equivalent to almost 5 cents a litre appearing on the at the bowser here in Australia.
Is it fair to say, from my understanding, that the Singapore price is what drives petrol prices in Australia, as opposed to your global Brent crude price or your West Texas meat WTI?
That's 100% accurate, and that's how we look to see what's going to happen here in the Australian market. And sometimes you see commentators make the mistake of looking at America or Europe and just assuming that the same thing's going to happen in Australia. So we look at Singapore MoGas, which is the refined product. Now, basically, it's their unleaded in Singapore. It's what they put in their cars. That is the refined price, the international benchmark price. That's what we look at when we're looking at what's going to happen here in Australia based on overseas. The unrefined product, or just the pure stuff that comes out of the ground, is called tapas. And if you were going to compare crude to something else, you would compare it to tapas. And that's how we decide what the prices are going to be here in Australia.
Do you remember, though, maybe 2 years ago, so if international oil prices impact the petrol price we pay, you also mentioned taxes, so the excise. Mm-hmm. The government cut the excise about 2 years ago to help with cost of living pressures. So the government does have a role here to play.
They do. It's not necessarily one that we like very much at the NRMA, and that might sound odd to your listeners. You know, why would you be opposed to cutting the tax, the fuel excise, when prices get really high? And in defence of the government at the time, we were seeing prices that we had never seen before, and there were some real cost of living challenges coming out of COVID, when inflation went through the roof.
And for a refresher, that was big. That was only temporary. So that fuel excise cut was only for about 6 months, from memory.
That's right. It was a 6 month cut in the excise. Now, the reason why the NRMA didn't support that approach in terms of looking for relief at the bowser, well, there's two. One is the excise is the tax that is meant to be used to fund fixing our roads, and that's really important, especially with the road toll being as high as it is nationally. And the other is Yes, we pay 50 cents a litre on tax, but the biggest contributing factor, as I said, is global oil prices. And so if we're going to get real relief at the Bowser, it has to come from falls in oil prices. We cut the excise, we still paid record high prices.
Peter, can I just ask you, I keep on hearing the term petrol price cycle. Is that what you're just talking about now? Can you give us a very general definition of what exactly that means?
If only we could. So the petrol price cycle is unique to Australia. There is nowhere else, anywhere else in the world that has anything like this petrol price cycle. And here in Australia, it's largely focused on or centred around the biggest capital cities. So Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth. We're now starting to see some of the smaller regional centres near those cities following these prices. So there have been government inquiries into these cycles. Oil companies have been asked time and time again why we have them, why doesn't anywhere else have them. The best description that we've been given, or the best definition that we've been given, is that it's a discounting cycle. So what happens is that the service stations will cut their prices to encourage people to come through the door, and then they will put their prices up, and when they go up, that's when they make their profit. That's the closest or best description we've ever been given. As I said, Australia's the only country in the world that has these cycles. I can't think of any other organisation in Australia that looks at petrol prices as much as the NRMA, and we're still not 100% sure about what it is.
So with that in mind then, is there a better day to fill up the car? For example, I've heard anecdotally Tuesday's the best day. Don't know why.
Yeah, so if you live in Perth, and for your listeners in Perth, yes, Tuesday absolutely is the best day to fill up. Perth has a seven-day price cycle, which means that every Tuesday is the cheapest day of the week. Overnight in Perth, prices will spike. So they'll go from the lowest point of the cycle to the highest point of the cycle on Wednesday, and then they'll spend the rest of the week falling until they get to the bottom again. So if you live in Perth, Tuesday. Everywhere else, it's a complete lottery. Mm. We used to have tight Tuesday. Well, that were two of the three words that they used to use to describe it. But that was back when we had a consistent price cycle.
So you'd fill up the car and then go watch a cheap movie on a Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. Or buy some cheap groceries at the servo, as I was saying.
So
we don't have that anymore, but it's completely volatile. The cycles can be 50 days long.
Sure. So in terms of remotely trying to follow price cycles, you hear about people that'll drive a couple of Ks to try and save some money on petrol. I mean, is that worth the time?
Absolutely. And regardless of the price cycle, it is absolutely worth the time to shop around. And look, a couple of kilometres is sensible. I wouldn't be doing half-hour trips to fill up. That's not really what we'd encourage people to do. Prices in Australia aren't regulated. The government doesn't set the price. It doesn't. It has no influence on what the retail price will be. And each service station can set its own price. And so what you end up seeing, especially in the bigger cities, is gaps of 30 or 40 cents a litre just in the local suburb, often around the corner from each other. So, yeah.
And is there an easy way for people to track those prices from place to place?
There is now. If you go back to 2016 in New South Wales, the NRMA launched a campaign to get what we called real-time data reform. So what we campaigned to get, and the New South Wales government adopted this policy, was to force every service station in New South Wales, every single one, bar none, to have to publish or provide their prices in real time. And then that was made readily available to the public. So you can go on the government's fuel check website in New South Wales, or you can go on the NRMA's app. And before you go and fill up, you can look at the price of every service station in your local area and find the cheapest one. If you're driving along, taking a holiday, driving up the coast, you can plot your journey and you can pick the cheapest service station. So that started in New South Wales in 2016. Gradually, other states and territories have been adopting similar policies. So we've pretty much covered the country, surprisingly, except for Victoria. So they're the outliers. Mm. They're holding on. I don't know why they're holding off from introducing the legislation. It's really effective because it puts a bit of power back in the hands of the motorists.
So you've got various fuel apps out there as well that can track petrol prices around different cities and different countries. Mm. The other way to get discounts is by using fuel discount vouchers. Mm-hmm. A lot of these vouchers, though, are often connected to some sort of a loyalty program. So if we talk about Coles jets, for example, they're connected to Flybuys. At what point is it worth giving up your personal data to get these discounts, do you think?
Yeah, look, like anything with data, you have to absolutely make sure that your privacy is protected. But also, the onus has to be on the organisations to protect the data of its customers and to make sure that it's not using that data unnecessarily or putting that data at jeopardy or at risk, and they have built the appropriate protections around the data that they hold of their customers. More broadly, and I think for a lot of people, they're probably wondering, is it worth it? Like, do I genuinely save money if I go and use these vouchers? And we just, our advice to people on all of those things is, you know, be sensible. If you're saving at the Bowser but paying extra in the aisles, then it's, you have to make the judgment call as to whether or not it's worth it. Because of the cost of living crisis in Australia, more and more we're seeing companies now offering, finding ways to offer their membership, their customer bases, their membership base, ways to save on everyday items. And so you're now starting to see more and more of these discount programs. But what we say to everyone is, do your maths before you lean in on these things, because you want to make sure that you actually are saving and that you're not saving here but paying more over there.
That's a good point, because at the start of the podcast, Peggy, you mentioned how when you went to fill up, you also went into the convenience store to buy your chippies, right?
Yeah, I do that routinely.
Yes. And often you'll go to the petrol station and you'll see, hey, come into store, and if you buy two bottles of water, you can get it at a discounted rate of $6. But those prices are usually a lot more expensive than what you're paying at a supermarket. So what would you tell consumers who are going to fill up at the petrol station when they walk into this convenience store, they see all these deals around? What's the kind of warning there?
So I'm a sucker for a $1.50 Coke Slurpee at 7-Eleven. But I also know that just because I'm going in to buy a Coke Slurpee for $1.50, that doesn't necessarily mean I should fill up at that particular servo. Check the price of the Bowser and then make your judgment call. The gaps between some of these service stations are so big. What you want to do is make sure you're finding the cheapest price. And sometimes and often, whatever the accumulated discounts are may not still mean you end up being better off at the Bowser. But also, often you're going to pay a lot more in some of these places for water and chips and bread and milk than you would elsewhere. So be a smart shopper, particularly in this current climate.
Here's a question I've always wanted to ask. So you're at the Bowser, you pull up, you've got various petrol pumps to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your premium, you've got your 95, you've got your 91 plus ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference? Does it make a difference? Because there's certainly a difference in price.
Absolutely. Does it make a difference? It depends on the car that you're driving. If you're driving a diesel car, please stay away from those petrol pumps and vice versa. Our advice on what type of fuel to buy is largely this. The manufacturer of your vehicle will tell you inside the fuel cap what type of fuel you should put in that vehicle. And we encourage you to listen to the manufacturer. We also know that around 70%, 75% of the cars on our road can take regular unleaded. So if your car can take regular unleaded, it means it can also take E10, which is cheaper. And what we always say to people is if you can take regular an E10, then feel free to fill up and save money and not pay that extra for the more expensive premium fuels. Because I've heard the stories, my car, my engine performs better on premium fuels. Yep. We've heard the stories about I used E10 and it ruined my engine. Well, to that, what we always say is you can't buy any fuel in America, in the United States, that isn't blended with ethanol. And I've been to America 10 times, and if that were true, there would just be convoys of broken down cars on the side of the road.
With E10, I find, I mean, this could just be me not paying proper attention to how long the petrol lasts in my car. It runs out quickly compared to just using regular unleaded petrol. Is that just me possibly overthinking it?
So some years ago, we did some real-world testing. Because we'd heard this as well, you know, if I put 98, I pay extra, I get to go a lot longer. So we tested three vehicles using the three variations and to assess that same thing. And these were done, this was scientific testing, real world. And what we found was with some cars, you got a little bit further on E10, remembering that, you know, E10's 94 octane. regular is 91. So E10 has a higher octane level, which is basically we're talking about energy levels or fuel levels. It depended on what sort of cars it was. In some cases, you got small increases in the tank using the higher octane fuels. In others, you got less. But it was largely negligible. We're talking, you know, less than 10 kilometres difference. So you may have felt it. If it was happening, I would be stunned if it was by a lot.
Fact or fiction? Petrol prices rise when it's holidays, school holidays, Easter holidays.
It used to be fact. There's no doubt that we used to see that behaviour many, many years ago. As we have spent more time at the NRMA focusing on fuel and as the public has become more educated on why petrol goes up and down and when, and that behaviour has become less apparent. One of the challenges we get now is with these price cycles, depending on where we are in the cycle, you can lead into the Easter long weekend, for example, and just happen to be at the high point of the cycle. That's unfortunate. And it feels like people are putting the prices up because it's the Easter long weekend. The reality is we just the cycle, unfortunately, timed itself poorly. And we have seen other examples where, you know, we've come into the October long weekend or the Christmas long weekend and the cycle was at the bottom. Now, one of the things that we are looking at very carefully at the NRMA is slight manipulations in the cycle to stretch them out longer so that if it is leading to the low point of the cycle heading into the Easter long weekend, that the oil companies aren't intentionally making the cycle longer to keep the prices higher just that little bit more. So it is a myth that they will just automatically go up on the weekends, but there is also an argument to be made that there's a bit of carry-on going on as well.
Is there anything we can do as drivers to save on petrol, either the way we drive, the load in the car? Are there any of those small things we can do to extend what's in our fuel tanks?
Yes, we can, but they're not small. These can make a huge difference to how much fuel you consume. And it's really basic stuff, and a lot of it's stuff that we probably would do anyway. So you're right, don't get the golf clubs out of the boot. Don't drive around with the golf clubs unless you're heading to play golf.
Do you play golf, Ricardo?
Do I look like I play golf?
Okay. So no heavy stuff in the boot.
No heavy stuff in the boot. Make sure the tyre pressure is what it should be, because that can low tyre pressure creates more drag, which means you're using more fuel. Little things like if you're driving around in the city and it's a bearable day temperature-wise, put the windows down rather than using the air conditioning. But if you're driving on a motorway or in longer country roads, put the windows up, use the aircon, because the windows down will create more drag. Don't be a lead foot. That makes a huge difference. Yep. Don't speed. Don't put your foot on the accelerator any harder than you need to. So there are little things that you can definitely do which make a huge difference to how much fuel you consume. And if you do all those things combined, you can save a lot of money.
Maybe the last thing, when we've spoken about fuel, at what point do you think it becomes more efficient for the hip pocket to switch to an electric vehicle where you're not paying for petrol, but you're still going to be paying for electricity to charge that car?
About 1 in 10 new cars sold in Australia today are electric vehicles. The numbers have been going up consistently, and the latest statistics to come out, it's about 1 in 10. So where electric vehicles are already becoming more popular. You know, when you're paying record high prices, they become a lot more, for petrol, they become a lot more attractive. And we've been paying record high prices now for quite some time. I think what a lot of people will be looking at is two things. First of all, the ticket price of an EV compared to a petrol or diesel car, similar size. They're catching up, but there's still a gap. You know, the EVs overall still are more expensive. But the other one, and I think the one that's more pressing here in Australia, is people are looking at charging and making sure that there's enough charging infrastructure so that they don't run out of battery
Is there enough charging infrastructure at the moment?
Not yet, but we're getting better. So the NRMA partnered with the New South Wales government and built the New South Wales regional network. We're doing the same now with the federal government, and you are now starting to see more and more organisations building charging across the country. Servo Oil companies are putting them in service stations. People are putting them in their homes.
Yeah, I know. I heard Ampol. I listened into Ampol's media analyst conference during the profit numbers, and the company was saying how they're starting to devote even more spaces to electric charging at their service stations too.
Yeah, definitely. And smart property developers are putting them into new dwellings. So you would be mad to put up an apartment block now and not put charging in the building.
Sure. I've also heard from strata block companies that they're trying to put those in existing older blocks of units.
It's quite difficult. Retrospectively, like I live in a block of apartments, and we tried to do it at home. And some of the challenges are, it can be a little bit expensive to put them in, but also making sure that you're paying for your car and that the whole building isn't paying for you to charge your car. So linking the charging to your meter, each individual meter, there's some technical challenges there, to be sure, but they can be met. There are solutions to those challenges. But I think in the first instance, making sure that when we are putting up new apartment blocks that we're automatically just putting charging infrastructure in them, it's common sense.
Oh, that's been great.
Thank you. That's Peter Khoury there from the NRMA. Peggy, do you know what? This was a great reminder to check what's in my boot to make sure there is nothing unnecessarily in there, because I think I've got some, big boxes of Coke or that sort of thing, or water that I've just left in there. You know those bags that you think that's got donated clothing that you think, when I go past the donation box, I'll just chuck that in there. That's still in the back of the car, and that's all eating up fuel. And that wraps up this edition of the podcast. Remember to subscribe for more as we explore how to save money every day, from supermarkets to good health and more.